Welcome to another episode of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. A progressive and populist insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining show on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people and not just the elite few. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters from his mid-Michigan attic, it's time for the award-winning Pat Johnston. It's all yours, Pat.
Yeah, welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston. I was listening to Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! On Wednesday, the 28th of January, and she played this Google ad that I've seen appear on some YouTube videos over the last few months, and it's a recruitment ad for ICE that promises signing bonuses of up to $50,000 and also student loan forgiveness if you sign up to become part of the Trump regime's ICE Gestapo. And that made me have to do just a little more research because I found this story from The Guardian's Alexandria Villarreal from just a few weeks ago detailing how ICE was planning a $100 million campaign blitz to increase the number of agents or brown shirts. And her reporting says ICE's wartime recruitment, that's how they describe it, wartime recruitment, is targeting conservative radio show listeners, gun rights aficionados, military affairs followers, and men's interest enthusiasts, among others in the MAGAverse, for jobs in the Trump administration's next phase of its mass deportation campaign. Want to deport illegals with your absolute boys? One of the agency's ads says, directing interested readers to apply. And the following is on ICE's recruitment page, also from the story. It says, America has been invaded by criminals and predators. We need you to get them out. Invaders? I mean, that doesn't really sound like we're talking about law and order, does it? It doesn't sound like we're talking about law enforcement. It doesn't even sound like we're talking about arresting and deporting so-called dangerous criminals. Sounds like something a little different to me. It sounds like Klan, with or without the masks. Well, actually, Willem Dafoe, they're still wearing masks today. Now, PBS's Lisa Mascaro wrote last week how ICE's ballooning budget is all thanks to the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, or as I've always described it here on Left of Lansing, the MAGA murder budget. Now, when I originally called it the MAGA murder budget, I was talking about how billions were being ripped away from the working class, like in SNAP benefits and Medicaid assistance, which will end up causing the deaths of many Americans. But that didn't faze MAGA Republicans in Congress, as outgoing Iowa Senator Joni Ernst mockingly told working class Americans that, hey, you're all going to die of something someday. I mean, she mocked the working class while she voted for huge corporate tax breaks and giveaways to the oligarch donor class, you know, the kinds of people who are allowed to kiss dear leader rings inside Mar-a-Lago, but will never, ever allow the working class, especially Trump voters, ever to enter that kind of residence. No, no, no. You think he'd ever let MAGA voters in there? But the one part I didn't concentrate on when the MAGA murder budget was being passed was how much money we're funneling to the already bloated Homeland Security Department, which oversees the ICE Gestapo. And before I go into that, let's just remember this. Just remember that the Department of Homeland Security was created during this country's mass freakout over the 9/11 attacks. And that made many in the surveillance and many in the defense lobbying industries very, very happy and very, very wealthy. And from the war on terror days, which were filled with waste, distrust, and unlawfulness, ICE was born. So when I tell you that George W. Bush's days were probably the most consequential days of the last 50 years in this country, that's what I mean. Getting back to that PBS story, here is a scary quote that I want all of you to hear. The GOP's big bill is supercharging ICE, one budget expert said, in ways that Americans may not fully realize, and that have only just begun. That's heartwarming, isn't it? Let me continue. In fact, even if Congress wanted to curtail Trump's immigration operations by threatening to shut down the government, for example, it would be difficult to stop the spending. What Trump called the Big Beautiful Bill is essentially on autopilot through 2029, the year he's scheduled to finish his term and leave office. The legislation essentially doubled annual Homeland Security funding, adding $170 billion to be used over 4 years. Of that, ICE, which typically receives about $10 billion a year, was provided $30 billion for operations and $45 billion for detention facilities. Facilities like the one in northern Michigan there in Baldwin. Now, it's almost as if the Trump regime is doing what it always promised it would do. It was never about getting rid of hardened criminals. It was about going after brown and black people, terrorizing them, while enriching the surveillance and private prison class. Now, there's an annual spending bill for the Homeland Security Department that'll be up for a vote sometime this week, probably after this show has been dropped. And if that bill doesn't pass, there'll be a partial shutdown. So while Democrats can't stop the steroid injections of spending for ICE thanks to that MAGA murder budget, Democrats in the Senate could at least draw a line in the sand and stop some funding, some future funding. And I'll give credit to Democratic Senators Alyssa Slotkin and Gary Peters for already announcing that due to the murder of Minnesota nurse Alex Preddy last weekend, the second Minnesotan that ICE has killed this month, by the way, that they will be a no vote for this Homeland Security spending bill. And that's good. And it appears that most Democrats are on board. But then you've got senators like Pennsylvania's John Fetterman, who turned out to be an AIPAC and Defense Department stooge. And he says that he'll never cut Defense Department spending and he'll never call to abolish ICE. I mean, with Democrats like those, why not just have Republicans in those seats? Because at least we'd never be deceived by them. We would know exactly who they are. I played for you last week how Senator Slotkin also said that she'd never vote to abolish ICE or never even call to abolish ICE because she would never say that about law enforcement. Of course, Senator Slotkin either was mistaken or lied in that statement because ICE is not law enforcement. It's turned into a white supremacist patrol with the power of the Trump regime behind it. And as Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman covered in an interview with Washington Post's Drew Harwell, ICE recruitment certainly sounds in many ways like white supremacist recruitment by using phrases like, "We will have our home again," or another recruitment ad from the Homeland Security Department depicting Uncle Sam at a crossroads sign that points to cultural decline, homeland, and invasion. And then there's a caption right with it that says, "Which way, American man?" Which sounds like the neo-Nazi book called "Which Way, Western Man?" Oh, and we still haven't learned how many of these new ICE recruits are former January 6th insurrectionists. I mean, we just can't seem to get any info on that one. Now, public sentiment towards abolishing ICE is growing by the day, with some polls showing a plurality of Americans in favor of abolishing it. I mean, regardless, it doesn't matter. It needs to be abolished. It is not American. It is not what America is about. And it wasn't even around until 2003. Yet a good handful of Democrats refuse to read the room and refuse to see the massive number of protesters while ICE terrorizes American streets, including here in Michigan, as it's being reported that ICE Gestapo agents were hanging out and capturing and kidnapping parents at their kids' school bus stops in Ypsilanti. And we're still not really sure, we're not getting any reports if any kids were kidnapped by ICE as well. I mean, Gestapo agents are resorting to terrorizing bus stops since Washtenaw County voted recently to ban ICE agents from entering any public buildings unless they have a warrant. I think that's called law and order. Oh, and while I'm thinking about it, the Lansing Press, I don't know if you've noticed, but it is falling all over itself and it's fawning over former Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan, who's running as an independent to become governor. I mean, they believe that, hey, if it says independent next to the name, that must be the best thing for Michigan. Mike Duggan is a corporate tool, which is why he knows that he fit in just nicely in the crooked corporate corruption that festers inside the Capitol building in Lansing. But let me remind you two things. Mike Duggan's big bankroller is Roger Penske, you know, the old auto racing owner guy who's given Mike Duggan around $20,000 in campaign donations. And Penske also gave over $1 million to Dear Leader and other MAGA-related campaigns in 2024. Oh, but yes, yes, Mike Duggan is an independent. And lest we forget how dear old Mike Duggan, right down the center, Mike Duggan, just 1 year ago, pounded his little MAGA chest and declared that Detroit would work with ICE under the Trump regime. That Detroit would work with ICE under the Trump regime. Just thought I'd like to offer that little reminder when it comes to Mike Duggan. ICE is going after marginalized citizens, whether they are American citizens or undocumented citizens working on obtaining citizenship. They're not just going after rapists or sex offenders, but if they were, you know, they could make a stop at the White House. But the reason why the murder of Alex Preti in Minneapolis gained so much attention and is causing the regime and MAGA land to twist itself into a pretzel is because of those showing up, protesting, and documenting all of the atrocities caused by ICE. I mean, we even got Dear Leader to say something I never dreamed he'd ever say.
With that being said, you know, you can't have guns. You can't walk in with guns.
What about the Second Amendment?
He's advocating for gun-free zones. What Second Amendment, I guess, right? But it's the protesters. The protesters who are making the difference. And not just in Minnesota, but in so many other areas across the country, including here in Michigan. Julia Pulver is a progressive fighter and activist, and she's been pushing for major peaceful protest movements against the atrocities caused by MAGA Republicans in Southeast Michigan and elsewhere. And Julia gave this moving speech last weekend, just after Alex Preti's murder, and while explaining why peaceful protesting matters and why it works, Julia said this, and I'd like you to listen.
The most effective protest movements that did not resort to violence are the ones that worked. And all you need to accomplish that, they have found the tipping point is about 3% of the population. When 3% of your population is engaged and ready at a moment's notice and can show up and can peacefully occupy and shut it down, that is when real change happens. So why? What are we doing? What do we do when we go to protests? We're practicing. We're training. So when they invade Detroit, we'll have the strength and the know-how and the muscle memory on how to respond. When they kill our Keith Porter, our Renee Good, our Victor Manuel Diaz, when they kill our Alex Preti, when they kill you or me, we will have built a movement that knows how to respond and respond on our terms.
Julia Pulver will join us here in just a moment. You're listening to LOL.
Bringing progressivism with passion each and every week. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, and the Gram. Subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. And subscribe to us on YouTube. We'd also like to thank Audio Boom for publishing the show and helping us spread our populist, progressive, and patriotic message. Speaking of which, let's get back to the show with Pat.
I couldn't think of anyone better to have on to help discuss and share her keen insights and political instincts when it comes to what we're seeing happening in Minneapolis, but also how the Trump regime's ICE Gestapo is also in communities across Michigan. And look, I get that some of us might feel overwhelmed and angry over what's happening. And at the same time, maybe you feel hopeless and powerless at times, which is exactly how I think the regime and its corporate allies in the media are hoping that you will feel and that you will just drop out. Well, joining me right now is someone who refuses to drop out on any fight, and that is Julia Pulver. She has been a strong progressive voice and activist for a number of years in Southeast Michigan. And as I said when describing her the last time she joined us here in 2025, Julia is someone who fights for those who can't afford high-priced lobbyists and consultants to get heard in Lansing or in local municipalities or at school boards. And so I'm happy that Julia has been able to spend a few moments with us here on Michigan's Premier Progressive Podcast. How are you doing, Julia?
Hey, Pat, I'm hanging in there. We're all just taking things one day at a time, and that's all we can be expected to do.
Yeah, you are so right there. Julia, I just wanted to let you know that I shared a clip of your moving speech that you gave at the Birmingham Unitary Church on January 25th, I believe. And it was the part of your speech where you explained that if around, I think, 3% of the population, you know, comes out, shows up, that's where nonviolent protests can really affect change. And look, we're literally seeing that in real time, as I will have to admit, the murder of Alex Preddy in Minneapolis seems to have made not only the Trump people backpedal a little, but it's freaking out some of the MAGA Republican supporters as well. And I think that's because if there weren't organizers and protesters, the numerous abuses by ICE agents would go unnoticed and undocumented, would they not?
Oh, absolutely. I realize that people feel powerless, but it's foundational of our country and even just the idea of democracy that you can't act without the consent of the governed, right? You can't do things against the people that they don't like, because we are supposed to be, you know, a government of, by, and for the people. And when the government is doing something that the people don't like, you know, there's this weird perception that democracy only happens in the voting booth. Right. That the only way that you ever exercise, you know, our democracy is by voting every few years. And that's it. Right. That's the only test. That's the only weather vane of how the public is feeling. Right. And the people who won the elections the last time love to revert back to that, to say, hey, look, we won. So people like what we're doing. The people want this. How often do you hear this? We have a mandate. The people want this. But every time you get people out in the street and making the news and making it very abundantly clear, like, hey, wait a second, not everybody is okay with what's happening here, you take away some of their power. You take away some of their power because they can no longer claim that they are acting with the consent of the governed. And the more people that show up and say, this is not what I want, whether or not, regardless of how you voted, you know, democracy is, the Republicans always say, we're a republic. Okay, what is a republic, right? It is having your elected representatives represent the people and do what they want. So even their stupid, weird, like, mincing of words or, like, perseverating, like, we're a republic versus a democracy. Even they can't run away from that fact. Like, fine, you want to, like, obsess over the term republic? Okay, what does that mean? That means your elected official, your representative is listening to the people. So it takes away that propaganda narrative that, oh, well, what we're doing is totally fine. So the more you can publicly, visually, loudly counter that, you take away a bit of their power.
We're kind of seeing that, not to kind of turn us to another area real quick, but we're sort of seeing that happen in real time when it comes to these protests against data centers throughout the state in both rural and urban areas as well, right?
This has been one of the most interesting phenomena that has come out of the last year or so. And that's the thing too, right? Every time people go out and protest, not only is it serving the purpose of pushing back against whatever the issue was that people were protesting, it's teaching other people how to do this as well, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone watching this is learning the methodology. Anybody can use it, right? We all watch each other, regardless of tribalism. Everyone sees what's happening, whether they agree with it or not. And so what's been really interesting is there is now a very unpopular push by oligarchs and the elected officials who are too afraid of them, or who just are happy to kind of fence sit and see how this goes and see what they can get out of it, right? So they want something. They want to have these big, stupid data centers put into wherever they can because they're going to make a buttload of money off of it, right? And local communities are like, wait a second, what do we get out of this? You're going to come in here, use up all our resources. Our water bills are going to go through the roof. You're going to poison our environment. You're going to have what, maybe a couple dozen jobs that you've already hired for that aren't necessarily coming from our community. And so like, what do we get out of it? Like we have all the risks and none of the benefits, and it just makes no sense. And so people of all political backgrounds in all parts of this state have seen and watched what is effective. And what's effective is a hyper local participation in your local government, in your townships, your cities, your city councils, you know, your township boards, all of these, all of your county commissions, anywhere that this is happening, where you have elected officials who are very close to the ground. People learned when you go and show up in large numbers and numbers that can't be ignored, the heat becomes too much for these local officials who want to get reelected. And you know, who these are your neighbors, right? These are not the people necessarily in, you know, Lansing, and definitely not the people in DC, right? Who you don't necessarily have a personal relationship with. Your city council member, likely, maybe they've got kids that go to your school too, right? They are people that are actually in your community. So when you turn that heat up enough, they back down. And we have seen this be successful regardless of political background. We have seen in super blue areas of the state, which we would expect. But then we had Kalkaska. We have like super red areas where, again, the people in Kalkaska, maybe they're not turning out to, and maybe some of them are, but I'm seeing the people that went to these town hall meetings were not necessarily the same people who were out in the streets doing anything else. But when it started to hit home, they relied on that muscle memory of what do? We show up at our local meetings. We make our voices heard. People are not just born knowing how to do that, right? We show them how to do that. Every single time you do an action, and even if it's slightly successful, you're teaching other people how to do that. And that's the beauty of democracy in action. That does not just happen one time at the ballot box. Democracy happens every single time the governed make their voices heard and say, no, you can't do this without the consent of the governed. We're the governed. We don't consent. So get the hell out of here. And it's working.
It is. And in fact, I think I even saw one Republican candidate for governor is now even saying he's against data centers. Who would have thought we'd see that? But you're right. I think it's because of the power of not just the messaging, but the power of numbers. And that's what's making them pay attention. Julie, I recently had other progressive activists from the west side of the state who've been part of protest efforts to help protect undocumented citizens from ICE while they're trying just to go through the process of obtaining legal status, which is what I thought this was all about to begin with. I thought that's what we were fighting for. Anyway, one activist I had on a few weeks ago, his name is Jeff Smith, and he's from the Grand Rapids Institute for Information Democracy. And he told me that while he and the countless others who are helping out in this effort, that they don't want to be harmed, they don't want to be beaten up or even killed by ICE agents, that if they don't stand up for marginalized citizens, he then asked, well, who will? Mm-hmm. Knowing you, I presume that's your belief system as well.
Oh, absolutely. It is time for people of privilege and comfort to get involved, right? We are the people who have the least amount to lose, and it's on us, right? We're the ones that are going to protect our community because we are in our community. Again, this is like democracy 101, right? Like we are going to protect our neighbors. We're going to protect our people. And that's why a lot of this is failing too, Pat, because the lies don't filter down to your neighbors. They're trying to justify their draconian, brutal, violent invasions of our states and our local neighborhoods. They're trying to justify it by gaslighting us and telling us they're only going after murderers and rapists and pedophiles and gang members and drug cartels and all that. And that plays at a national level because everyone always thinks, oh, it's always happening somewhere else. Oh, yeah. Well, of course, there's those people in that city that I've only heard bad things about. Of course, those people are bad and evil. But wait a second. You're surrounding my neighbor now? You're coming to my kid's school now? What the heck? There's not murderers and rapists and gangbangers at my kid's elementary school. Their dad is the guy that's been in our community for 28 years and has had a green card and has been going through the process. And now you're showing up at our kid's school. And this guy's been nothing but nice. He helped us with our PTA fundraiser. You know what I mean? Like, you can't lie about people that we actually know. That's why it just falls so flat. And these communities are quickly getting together and trying to protect people who, you know, when it boils down to it, it's just a paperwork issue. People are not willing to watch their neighbors be brutalized over paperwork. There's this huge disconnect that comes from, and this is why, honestly, I see this as a huge political miscalculation from the MAGAs and from every single Republican who has yet to find their spine and say, wait a second, this is not what we signed up for. This has gone way too far. They are losing this battle because they have sold this as a lie. We all knew, I mean, those of us who've been paying attention knew, and those of us who have even studied the smallest bit of history of authoritarian movements and things, there's always has to be a scapegoat. There always has to be a big lie that they tell in order to justify what they do. And enough people buy it to give them power. And then the bait and switch happens, right? They say, oh, you just want to protect all these people out in the street. They just want to protect murderers and rapists and pedophiles and sex, you know, criminals, and how dare you try to stop our lovely, you know, just doing their jobs, law enforcement. They want to have these sob stories of their, you know, poor, pitiful oppressors are not welcomed by their communities that they're terrorizing. Oh my gosh, who could have seen that coming? It's so bizarre. But the more local you get, once it hits home, those lies fall apart because Mr. So-and-so is not a bad guy. So why are they beating him up and disappearing him into a van? Why is, you know, this little five-year-old boy is not a danger to anyone? He's got his little backpack and his little hat on. Like, those are the things that break containment. And this is what's happening now. Like, people who just want to tune it out, who it's too much, they can't take it. They've got jobs. We're all busy. We're all doing stuff. It's easy. It's really easy to tune out. And it's really easy to just protect your heart and your sanity and not want to have to deal with it. But some things break containment. And we are at that point now where it is ubiquitous. It is everywhere. You can't get on TikTok or Instagram or Facebook, or you can't even watch anything without it coming up. It's getting so bad, and it's getting to be one of those things that people can't ignore anymore. And people have watched them march across the country. They started in LA, and then they went to Chicago, and then they went to Minneapolis, and now they're trying to be in Maine, and they were in Portland forever. Most people in the country now are going, okay, wow, are we next? What do we need to do to get prepared? And so they have made just a huge miscalculation, and they are going to pay for it. People are so mad. I don't think they even know what's coming, but people are so mad, and people are getting mad that were never mad before. And that's a huge problem for them. But it's great for us because anger motivates people, but we have to make sure that those angry people are given directions on how to move their feet in an effective way.
Agreed. And, you know, just to kind of continue where you were going there a little bit, my Monday musing this week, I said how the knee-jerk reactions by some MAGA Republican office holders, obviously by some Trump people like Christine Noem and Stephen Miller and a few others, and also by MAGA influencers, revealed, you know, a couple things. One, that their Second Amendment arguments were always done in bad faith, which we always knew. We always knew that. But more importantly, it just proved to me how this was never, ever. And, well, you know what? It didn't even take this. I knew it from the very beginning. But it just proved, maybe it's proving it to everybody who maybe didn't have their eyes open, that this wasn't about deporting criminals. Because if it were, they go through the legal steps of doing it. I always said this was about harassing, terrorizing, kidnapping, disappearing, and if need be, killing people of color. You know, the ones who don't look, quote unquote, American. But what drives these white Christian nationalists / supremacists, I think, the most angry about everything that we're seeing is when white people get in their way. Because exactly. Because in my view, I think they see those protesting white people as the true traitors to their cause, which is, I think, goes way back maybe to Civil War times. And, well, we've seen what they do to white people now who get in their way. I mean, am I way off base on that conclusion?
Nope, you are not. You are
perfectly right on the base. So Christian nationalism doesn't really actually exist as a movement outside of white supremacy. They are the same movement. You know this for a fact because if they were separate movements with separate ideologies, you would see the Christian nationalists join us in protest against the treatment and mistreatment of immigrants because guess what? Majority of the people that they are deporting or, you know, brutalizing and detaining are Christians. They are coming from highly Catholic country backgrounds. A lot of, you know, Central and South America are Catholic and they're, or, you know, some denomination of Christian. Have you, Pat, have you seen anyone who claims that they're a Christian nationalist coming to the defense of Christians being like brutalized and rounded up and put in concentration camps and, you know, mistreated? I haven't.
I can't say I have either.
So Christian nationalism as its own thing doesn't exist. It is an offshoot of white nationalism, which is a belief that America should not be of, by, and for the people. It wants to put an asterisk and say it should be of, by, and for the white people. And that anybody else, if you are allowed to be here, it's because we've been so generous and have allowed you to stay here in some, you know, lesser capacity of society. That's the ethos here. That is the ethos that, well, maybe we can't do everything that we want to do to get rid of anybody who isn't white, but here's where we can start. And here's where we can put on a show for our white nationalist base and get them all excited every single time we show these hype videos of us just completely violently taking down and beating up and shackling and putting into stress positions. And it is like a snuff film for white nationalists in this country. And they're doing it, that they're not fulfilling law enforcement actions. They're not sort of like reluctantly going in and doing their job because it's their job. They are getting off on this. And I am like not being cute about this. They are literally, there's some aspect of this that is sexual. I am telling you, they are absolutely working out some weird issues here. But the root of all of this is white nationalism. You know, if anybody, you know, follow me on Blue Sky. As a nurse, what do? I document things. I tend to use a lot of the hashtags to document things. And one of them that I use is just hashtag, this is white nationalism. If you want an example of a million different things of how they are enacting their white nationalist agenda on the whole country, you know, I give you a million examples. And it even comes down to, you know, I don't know how much time you spend or anybody spends looking at the government handles on places like X or even Facebook, whatever. They put out these weird old propaganda posters, right? Like the Department of Labor has one with like white happy families looking like 1950s weird or like Norman Rockwell-y kind of a thing. And they're like, this is what they took from you. And everyone's like, the hell are you talking about? You can still be white and have a family. Like no one took anything from you, you know, like, or these government websites, the government official social media accounts are sharing literal Nazi slogans. They're like one voice, you know, one people, one leader, one, you know, they like tweak it a little bit so it's a little Americanized, but they're literally using Nazi propaganda words and images to try to sell to the American people what they're doing and to try to make them mad that some like non-white boogeyman came in and stole their American dream. It's so ridiculous, but like it would be funny again if it weren't so dangerous, because this is like this dangerous feedback loop between all of them. This is all being done as a performance for a small group of people headed by Stephen Miller. Like I call him Timu Goebbels, and it is all to serve this end, even to the point now where Kristi Noem, because she knows she's in trouble, she's trying to throw up her hands and give the old, you know, rejected Nuremberg defense of, I was just doing what Stephen Miller told me to do. Right. Like they've given up the game entirely. And the second reason we know too, that this is absolutely has nothing to do with legitimate concerns about how do we solve immigration, you know, immigration reform, and how do we make sure our communities are safe? Like, you know, these are all like legitimate questions that you can ask, like, what should immigration look like in our country? And what do we do with people who are violent criminals? And how do we, you know, it's like, well, we have a lot of answers to all of these questions already. Like if they really are violent criminals, you go get a warrant, you serve that warrant, you go through the criminal justice system. Like these are not solutions you have to invent. They exist. So anyway, they completely give up on the idea that they are just, again, reluctantly carrying out law enforcement duties, the dispassionately following the law. And sorry if that, you know, makes some people upset, but this is what has to happen. No, none of that, right? This is all just performance art, I guess you can call it dystopian performance art for their white supremacist base, which is, you know, cloaked enough in sort of normal, normie talk to kind of fly under the radar. But then the biggest giveaway this week, right? What did Pam Bondi do in her like ransom note to the state of Minneapolis? She said, okay, fine. The beatings will stop if you hand us your voter rolls.
Right.
It's like, that is the biggest, clearest piece of evidence that you need to know to say this was never about like reluctantly enforcing our immigration laws because there's been this mythical influx of all these bad hombres, right? No, this has always been about creating an authoritarian state that's anchored in D.C. from the White House that wants to tell us what we can and cannot do in this country. And if you get in our way, we'll kill you. You know, and that's basically what it boils down to. And they want, this is the other thing that I think I've taken the most hope and inspiration from. They want us to be scared and quiet, right? That is how authoritarians take power, right? They make a few people examples. I think they started doing that with those horrible CECOT videos. Remember?
Yep.
We're going to show you these videos of us just absolutely just abusing and humiliating and denigrating and just torturing these men. And we're going to tell you they all deserve it because they're the worst of the worst. They're tren de Aragua. They would kill you before you had a second to, you know, everything they wanted to do. And then, of course, we find out, no, they were like gay hairdressers and this guy who's a father in Maryland and things like that, right? But it started with that. They wanted anybody who, you know, might not have the right paperwork to look at that and go, oh my God, I better get out of here. I better do their job for them, right? And or I better hide. Everybody better be quiet to keep me. And what did we do? We got loud. You know, we went out into the streets. And so now they're like, wait a second. Every time we do something, there's going to be people in the streets. Well, now they want the people in the streets to be afraid. So what do? They start killing us. They start shooting us for the flimsiest of excuses, hiding what actually happened, refusing to let anybody but themselves investigate themselves. And they're engaged in multiple cover-ups. What happened in the last, you know, month of January when we've seen, you know, two protesters now gunned down in the street for no freaking reason? They wanted protesters to be scared and quiet and to retreat and to stay in our place. And what do? We came out and are even louder. People are now, there's local community organizations that, you know, in Minneapolis that are helping residents who are too afraid to come out. They're helping people. And they had an influx of like, they usually had like 600 volunteers. Last thing I heard, they have like 4,000 now. So it's like, it's having the opposite effect. Every single time they try to make us afraid and they try to keep us quiet, we are not doing that. I always just ask, I'm like, have they met Americans? Do they know who we are from our birth, from our founding, from like everything? I mean, it was what Nathan Hale who said, my only regret is that I have but one life to give my country, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we always think of the military as being the only people who are willing to die for their country. Alex Preti died for his country. Renee Good died for her country, right? We have many ways that we can show up and, if it comes to it, give our lives for the country that we demand to have. They don't understand Americans, which is bizarre because they claim to speak for all of us. They don't understand Americans. Say what you will about us, but we are entitled. All right. We have been bred with this idea of exceptionalism, that we are exceptional because we have laws, because we have freedom. We have freedom of speech. We have freedom to bear arms. I can't even believe we haven't gotten into this more so, Pat. The fact that within a day, they completely abandoned the Second Amendment because their dear leader said, you can't have guns anymore. Although there are some people who prickled at that more than others and are starting to say, whoa, wait a second.
Right. He did double down on it.
He did. And he's going to do it again. And so Americans, yes, we are many, many things. But the thing that makes me sleep at night is knowing that we will never, ever bow down to a tyrant. They can kill a bunch of us, but they can't kill all of us. We figured that out long ago. We have, as flawed as our system is, we do have built into our system of government ways in which we can remove people and remedy the situation. It may not be fast enough. It may not be thorough enough. It may not be exactly what we need and want, but we do have the mechanisms to do this, and we will. You know, voting, like I said, is one way to do things, but we have enough people in our country that are tuned in, and we get more every single day, that are getting angry and are just unwilling to live like this anymore, Pat. We don't want to live like this. We don't want to live in fear. We don't want to second guess whether or not we can say something and not expect someone to come knock on our door. We refuse to live in a world where if we show up to protest, the government is now shoving cameras in our face and saying, we're going to put you on a registry because now you're a domestic terrorist for simply showing up to protest, because that's what is happening. ICE has been told that they now need to get video of protesters so they can be put into a database and charged as domestic terrorists. I mean, it's ridiculous. And people don't want to live like that. Again, all of these heavy-handed methods that they use that they think are trying to scare us just piss us off. Right. We're not scared. We're pissed.
You know, and one more thing. This will have to be the last thing here. But okay. I shared a story on here just a few weeks ago about how I was walking my dog just a couple Saturdays ago before we had this major cold spell. And as I approached the main street of my downtown, I saw one guy. Just one guy walking back and forth with these two signs. And as I was getting closer, I was able to read them. And the signs said, dump Trump, not the homeless. And I live, Julia, in a red area, pretty red county here, Gratiot County. But he was getting drivers to beep at him in support, you know, and I gave him a thumbs up. And he told me, you know, he shouted back to me, just said, hey, help spread the message. And I told him that I try to do that each and every week. But that just showed me how sometimes doesn't really just have to be the volume of people at times. Sometimes the power of just one person can let others know that they aren't alone. And I think that's what we're seeing happening more and more across the state, especially in some red areas.
Absolutely. And that's a beautiful story. You know, your protest does not have to include 1,000 people. One guy in a red area standing on a street with a clearly written sign that says what he believes and people can respond to it. Everyone who drove by him saw him and knows now, hey, there's someone in my community who maybe thinks the way that I do. Maybe I'm not alone, right? That's powerful. That is incredibly powerful. Thank you for sharing that story, because that's a great visual. One guy saying, you know what? I've had enough. I can't take it anymore. I'm going to go out and I'm going to make sure my community knows how I feel. That is democracy. That is absolutely democracy. That is a citizen or a person living in this country who is saying, I'm not going to take this anymore. This is not what I want my elected representative, because we are a republic. This is not how I want my representative to be representing me. And it's undeniable, you know, because now that person, all the people who saw that person, when they're in having a conversation with somebody else, maybe they're at the grocery store or they're at the PTA meeting or they're somewhere else in their community, if it comes up and they say, well, nobody around here seems to have a problem with it, they're all going to say, actually, I saw a guy standing there with a sign that said, no, I don't like this. You know, so now they can no longer claim that their whole community supports this, because at least there was that one guy, you know. And we talked a little bit about the magic number, right? That three, it's actually people, sociologists who have studied effective, nonviolent political movements that topple oppressive regimes. The magic number is 3.5%. That's the tipping point. Once we reach 3.5%, which in America is roughly around 12 million people, when we have that number of people who can consistently show up ready at a moment's notice to do something, that is when we have real, tangible political power. And we are very close to that. And that's why when I said in my remarks at church, I know people are getting fatigued. I know people are getting frustrated that what we're doing hasn't borne fruit yet, right? That it hasn't made big, tangible impacts on the administration or the tactics or anything that they're doing. And I hear you. I'm frustrated too. But this building movements does take time, and it takes effort, and it takes practice. Anybody listening, Keep showing up, keep practicing, keep training, build your muscle. That's what it's going to take. We have to have political muscle to make big waves and big changes. So if you're, whether you're standing out there by yourself or you're showing up to an indivisible action, or you're going because something happens in your community and you just have to respond immediately, every single time you do that, every single time you refuse to be quiet, you are practicing and you are building your muscle, and we are building up to a point where we can actually change what's going on just through the power of the people.
Julia Pulver, thank you so much for your voice. Thanks so much for your heart. And thanks a lot for your nervous system, too. but thanks again for being on. And hey, we'll have you back on here real soon, okay?
Thank you, Pat. I appreciate you and everything you do. And everybody out there, stay safe and stay mad.
Listening to Michigan's premier progressive podcast, It's Left of Lansing. Subscribe and give a good review of the show wherever you're listening. You can check out show archives on leftoflansing.com. And if you need more Pat, visit Left of Lansing on YouTube. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
Just wanted to send a special thanks to my good friend Julia for speaking her piece. And what I love about Julia is that she'll never, ever hold back, and she'll never quit fighting for all of us. I'll share the link to Julia's speech that she gave at the Birmingham Unitary Church last weekend, as well as a way to find her on the Blue Sky. I was glad that Julia mentioned how patriots aren't just those who wear the uniform, but I was also glad that she mentioned how protesting is kind of the centerpiece of this country's founding. I mean, hell, can you imagine how the Trump regime would have described the Boston Tea Party protesters? And can you just imagine how Fox News and MAGA influencers would have described the Boston Tea Party? I mean, not only did those Tea Partiers defy King George, but they also damaged their precious private property. How dare you, sir? By the way, where is the Tea Party nowadays? I thought they were against government tyranny. Don't tread on them and all that. Where are they? But Julia also gives us a blueprint that joining protests in your community is a perfect way to build a movement within said community, because what starts on the local level can then lead to nationwide change. So check out and see if there are some indivisible chapters holding protest in your neck of the woods or local Democratic chapters as well. The numbers matter. And while it may have taken some of you a little while to get involved, hey, I don't care. I'm glad you are. Because to quote Victor Laszlo from Casablanca, welcome to the fight. Here's this week's Left of Lansing Last Call. To paint a perfect picture over how MAGA Michigan Republicans believe in steamrolling each branch of government, they're now threatening the Michigan Supreme Court. 12 MAGA Republicans in Lansing sent a letter to Chief Justice Mary Kavanaugh last week warning her and the court to reject a proposed rule prohibiting any civil arrest from taking place in a courthouse while attending a court proceeding or having legal business in the courtroom, a rule that would apply to most ICE arrests, as reported by Michigan Advanced. And the letter also warns that such a rule would make courthouses a safe refuge for dangerous criminals. Right. But listen to this. The letter continues to say that if such a rule is allowed, then the state house would find it difficult to see how this would not have an impact on the future funding of some court operations, as the courthouse would now be an impediment to the efficient administration of justice. Wow. Now, the court has received over 2,500 comments on this proposed rule with lawyers and advocates in complete support of it. But make no mistake, this is the MAGA Republican majority in the state house attempting to put its finger on the scale by warning the state Supreme Court to rule in its favor of terror and kidnapping in courtrooms across the state or else. I mean, that's how MAGA Republicanism governs, by bullying and intimidation. I mean, do they believe in checks and balances or rule of law or the state constitution or the United States Constitution? I mean, if they did, then they wouldn't be trashing their beloved Second Amendment like they've been doing this week. Like ICE, MAGA Republicans operate on threats and intimidation. And if the state Supreme Court passes this rule, well, then you know why they're making these threats, because it would make it harder for them to make the state whiter.
You're listening to Left of Lansing. Music for the show and everything else on Left of Lansing is provided by Wanderbeats. To hear the latest project and complete music archives, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site or subscribe to Space Leopard on YouTube. Now, back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of the Left of Lansing. Thanks again to Julia Pulver for joining us here again this week. And remember, you can email me at leftoflansing@gmail.com if you have any praises or criticisms or future show topics or guest ideas. I mean, again, this show is about connecting progressives across the state and across the country. So it's really a show about you, and it's a show about and for us. And just before I go, I know I've been critical on both Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer and Democratic Senator Alyssa Slotkin on this show, but we are all human beings, and I'd just like to send my condolences to each since both lost their fathers in this past week. It's been just over a year since my mom passed away, and losing a parent is something you just don't get over. So my condolences to both of them. Remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
You've been listening to Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Left of Lansing was produced by Pat Johnston, brainstormed by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and yes, hosted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. Thanks to our good friend Rich for website assistance, and thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. We thank Audio Boom for publishing the podcast every week. Visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to Michigan's premier progressive podcast, and we'll talk with you again next week.